Wars 2.
Great.
It's Monday, May 3rd, 2010. This is Greg Downey performing this interview. And if you could state your name for the record and go ahead and spell it out so I don't mess it up.
Okay, it's Sang-tae, nickname Sang Kim, S-A-N-G-T-A-E-K-I-M.
Excellent. As we spoke before, we're collecting interviews for the Historical Archive. That means I'm going to ask you some questions that seem kind of basic, even though I know something about your work and we've been acquainted. Many of the people who use the archive may not, and it's useful for them to have the information in your words. And as you can see, we'll be working through a rough interview script so that all the interviewees talking to the various PIs ask roughly the same questions and cover the same terrain.
Okay, sounds good.
So before we get into the details of your work, tell me a little bit that will help me understand who you are as a researcher or educator and how you got here. How did you get to find yourself here at UW-Madison?
Well, I guess it starts with being on the faculty here for a 15-year period from 1983 to 1997. And the story of how that came about, my parents are both academics and had many friends from academia. And so in my childhood, growing up in Montreal, Canada, I heard stories about how the University of Wisconsin was such a great and unique public university, even as far away as Montreal, Canada, by friends of my parents who were alumni of the University of Wisconsin. And so many years later, as I was finishing my doctorate and applying to universities for a career in academia as a faculty member, and at that time it was a PhD in chemical engineering, and the University of Wisconsin historically has one of the best chemical engineering departments in the world, so it was naturally a place that was on my radar. And in that interview season of 1982, I was fortunate enough to get an offer from the University of Wisconsin chemical engineering department, so I made the decision to come to Wisconsin. After a 15-year career, I had the opportunity to join the pharmaceutical industry at a very exciting time in the late 90s as the information technology revolution was taking place. And so after a 12-year journey that took me to industry and the National Science Foundation and then back to academia at Purdue, I was approached by my friends here at Wisconsin to come back and join the Wisconsin Institutes for Discovery project to lead the private Morgridge Institute for Research, because they were looking for somebody at this intersection between biotechnology and the biomedical research and the information technology. And so my experiences both before on the faculty and my life beyond the university, just everything came together to make this a natural thing to do next.
Great. So tell me a little bit more about your work, the cocktail party version. If I met you at a reception for academics, not necessarily all of them scientists, how would you describe your work to me?
Well, my original research interest was what would be called micron scale fluid mechanics. And our physical intuition of the fluids around us, like water and air, change dramatically when you get to the micron scale, because the laws of physics change and things become much more sluggish and sticky. It's almost like the water and air that we take for granted become as thick as honey or molasses. And there are special computational methods that have been developed over the years to solve the engineering and science problems of such viscous fluid flow. And in that process, I became familiar with some of the same computational equations that one encounters in computational biology. Because when the living macromolecules, the DNA and the proteins, when we look at their dynamics in living systems, they're in that same aqueous viscous environment in that micron to nano scale. And so there was a natural transition from microfluidics to computational biology. And from there, I got more interested in the computational challenges of the pharmaceutical industry. So at an intellectual level, that's the research expertise that I bring to the Institute.
So we know that each of the Morgridge theme leaders got involved for slightly different reasons, and you've already kind of indicated how you came to your position as both a theme leader and director. Can you talk a little bit more about, in particular, how you became involved with Morgridge and what that was all about?
So I think there was a combination of the research excellence that we want to see at the Institute, but there was also an expectation of the financial viability and the long-term growth of the institute and how that would also help the economic impact of the university, especially with this relationship with the state of Wisconsin. So there are what we would call business challenges that also parallel the scientific challenges. And it was that combination and the opportunity to play that out in an agile, nimble private institute that I found very appealing.
So, talk more about both the risks and the benefits of being involved with the Institute in that way.
Well, one of the first decisions that I made when this opportunity came up is to contrast that with the standard or typical positions in a university. The typical research position in a university is that of a tenured faculty member. So I talked the board about structuring the executive director position in my case, especially for me, as a fixed appointment, a 5-year appointment with an extension beyond that, but it would not be a tenured position. And so I specifically declined the opportunity to interview for a parallel tenured appointment at the university. And I felt that was consistent with this vision of an institute that was bold and willing to take risks. I felt that the classical model of a tenured position as some kind of a safety net would actually negate the expectations of this being a bold experiment. And that's a decision that I made.
So when you get back to your particular research, how will your work look different as a result of being involved in this in these institutes?
So some of the ideas that I developed when I was in industry around the role of computer-aided drug design. Interestingly enough, despite the big budgets associated with large pharmaceutical companies, most of the monies are spent actually running the drill of taking candidate molecules and going through the various stages and eventually producing, after successful clinical trials, the medicines that become the product. There's actually less opportunity to innovate on new techniques. And so what I see as an exciting opportunity at the Morgridge Institute for Research is think of those new ideas and new techniques that I thought of and do the research to explore those new and better ways. In some sense, instead of just cranking through the gears, think of ways we envision making the gears better or more efficient. And yet the scale of that research is so large that as an individual faculty member, I found it very difficult to actually get the scale of funding to actually put some of those new ideas together. I think the Morgridge Institute offers the scale to actually try those.
And as you think about fleshing out your team with new faculty, or new researchers, I should say, because you make a point that it's not always a faculty relationship, what are your most important considerations as you're looking for people to bring onto your team?
I think we had a very specific model of going from discovery to delivery. And so to show how all these different stages come together to make some of the parts, something that the whole is bigger than the sum of the parts, it was important to have a blend of people from discovery biology to some of the more applied areas, including engineering and mathematical and computational methods, to bring it all together in what I call the delivery technology centers. That included pharmaceutical and medical devices expertise to balance the investments and opportunities in fundamental research in the biomedical sciences. And so I think we have a nice blend. And then that also implies willingness and ability to work in teams and collaborate and have a comfort zone in talking to people and working with people immediately beyond your immediate areas of expertise. So I thought that was important as well.
Do you have any sense for how you find people like that, or how you can tell if someone's going to be successful here at the Institute?
Well, I think some of the senior people that we recruited, they already have developed a track record at the university. And despite the fact that the Institute did not exist, they had managed to forge a path. And in my early stages, even before I accepted the offer, as I was interviewing and coming for interview visits, I met with some of these potential leaders and asked them whether an institute like this would help them achieve what they had already achieved, but do it in a faster and catalyze a faster achievement. And without exception, everyone said that such an institute would have been very instrumental in helping them achieve their goals even faster. Mm-hmm. And so that was how I knew that we were on the right track in finding the right people.
Mm-hmm. Great. So the last part of the interview is a set of broader questions about your perceptions and understandings of the combined experiment, the whole institutes. And they are kind of an experiment. We hear them talked about in that way. Looking ahead 5 years, how will we know if that experiment has succeeded, or at least that it's going well?
Well, I think there are two obvious things that I can think of. One is the relationship between the public and private institutes. Mm-hmm. And also, by public institute, I would also extend that to the entire university campus. Mm-hmm. I think one of the great strengths of a world-class university is that it casts a very wide net, supports, and it's even in the Wisconsin idea, and about the strength and values of the University of Wisconsin going back centuries, about sifting and winnowing, and truth comes from unexpected sources, and advances come from unexpected sources. So you cast a very wide net. It's kind of a bottoms-up process. Mm-hmm. But of course, there's a price to be paid for that, in that consensus and agreement can take a while, and sometimes it seems like we can't focus and move very quickly on something that you may feel is very important. Mm-hmm. So to balance that with a top-down approach on the public, on the private side, where we can focus on a few things and move very quickly. Now, of course, the flip side of that is you do run the danger of missing the next big thing. So having this top-down and bottom-up approach work together, mm-hmm. I hope to create a blend where you have the best of both worlds. Mm-hmm. So that's one big experiment that's going to be played out. Mm-hmm. The second big experiment that's going to be played out is we believe that the Mortgage Institute, by working on a good set of problems initially and focusing a lot of resources, we think that we can make a very big contribution to an already successful history of technology transfer. Mm-hmm. We're at an interesting crossroads right now where the historic valuations of the biomedical sciences intellectual property that the University of Wisconsin has so successfully generated in the past, mm-hmm. that the valuation of those discoveries and IP is going down as the world and especially the market forces realize the long pathways from fundamental discovery to the actual products that find their way as medicines or medical devices. Mm-hmm. And as that pathway becomes longer and longer, and as the failure rates increase or the attrition rates increase, there's a natural tendency to lower the valuation of fundamental discoveries. Mm-hmm. And so if we can create a new dynamic which shortens that pathway and increases the success rate, and we don't have to do it ourselves, we can do it in partnership with all elements of society that have a similar interest, mm-hmm. then the market forces would naturally restore the value of the IP generated by the university. Mm-hmm. And that, in the long run, would be the big value in addition to the intellectual environment that we create and contribute to, the value that we enhance in the university's IP, mm-hmm. I mean, that would be the big contribution that I hope that the Mortgage Institute can provide for the university.
Okay. It sounds like that one is very, it would be readily apparent. I mean, you could start looking at what are those relationships, what are the innovations that are they're making their way towards market, and are they doing so more quickly than you
That's
know.
Right.
In terms of the first part of the experiment that you talked about, balancing sort of the bottom-up idea generation, mm-hmm. and governance with sort of top-down, mm-hmm. hey, this is the direction we're going to go, how will we know if that's working well in 5 years?
I think, say, 5 years from now, as the Mortgage Institute brings more resources through its earlier set of efforts, let's say that we have the opportunity to create a new thematic area. Now, the first four scientific areas, namely regenerative biology, virology, medical devices, and pharmaceutical informatics, mm-hmm. were created in a top-down fashion, mm-hmm. just to get the Institute started.
Right.
But let's say that the fifth area is chosen out of the momentum of what was generated by the university and the public institutes. Mm-hmm. Maybe a new area reaches critical mass and momentum thanks to opportunities in the greater world and the economic forces that happen over the next 5 years. Mm-hmm. And then that would be an example of a bottoms-up generation of something big. And then the Mortgage Institute could partner with the public side and create the next big thematic area, put a lot of resources from the mortgage side of the of the equation, and that would be an example of the next big thing being created from a bottoms-up approach, but then benefiting from the top-down approach and getting a lot of focused attention and resources.
Okay. So going forward with that theme of the relationship between the Wisconsin Institute side and the mortgage side, besides the sort of bottom-up, top-down sort of choice of problems to work out and meeting in the middle, what are some other aspects of the relationship, aspects of that hybrid nature that we should know about that you'll be looking for?
Well, one thing that I'm very excited about, and that you're already starting to see the impact, is the reality that to do modern science, you need some very high-end equipment and instruments, maybe microscopes and other instruments that cost several millions of dollars.
Right.
And the competition for such grants, the so-called large equipment grants, are very competitive. Quite often, the institutional matching is a very important component beyond the technical merits and scientific merits of the proposal. And historically, University of Wisconsin has, in my opinion, danced close to the edge of viability in some of these competitions by not putting enough money on the table in terms of matching. So here again is an example where the Mortgage Institute, through our prioritization, saying that particular instrument is important for us, and not just for us, but the entire scientific community, we can put significant matching funds on top of what the university might have historically done, and that would increase the chances that this proposal would succeed, and also the extra money would allow us to get an even higher end of the instrument than the original proposal would have allowed, allowing for even more capabilities, and these instruments wouldn't be unique to the institute, but would be a broadly shared community resource. And in fact, some of the instruments that we're currently looking at, even though Mortgage is putting many hundreds of thousands of dollars in matching funds, the actual instrument would be located at a facility in one of the departments, and not even in the Widmere building, because that particular facility makes the most sense for the entire university community. So that's an example of the kind of partnerships that we see already forming.
Great. So let me ask you a little bit about the relationship between the institutes and the broader community, the public. There's been a lot of talk about this being an opportunity to forge a new kind of relationship. How do you think about the broader public and its relationship to the institutes? For example, we hear the statement, to be fertile crossroads for ideas among diverse parts of the UW-Madison and the larger community, those kinds of things. Talk to me a little bit about
it. So I think certainly Mortgage, because of its activities in these emerging areas of science, as well as the economic impact from thinking from discovery all the way to delivery, it'll bring something to that discussion. But in terms of hosting that discussion, this is an opportunity to highlight the three entities.
Right.
There is the public institute, the private institute, and then there's also the town center.
Right.
So the town center is the actual entity that will be hosting this community-wide discussion, whether something as mundane as scheduling the meeting rooms and facilities to hosting events and reaching out to the public and offering the embedded teaching labs and so on. All of those activities are part of the town center. And the Mortgage will be one of the participants of that town center activities. But that kind of shows you the picture of how we see this engagement occurring.
Do you see connections with that engagement back to the research itself? How will it make a difference to the work being conducted to kind of have the town center right there at hand and have those activities happening on
site? That's a great question. And I think a good example of that dynamic would be area like bioethics. Obviously, new science and new knowledge inevitably brings questions in ethics and especially bioethics. And recently, in the recent history, human embryonic stem cells is a great example. And the so the bioethics issues that we all live with, and in one end of the spectrum, you even have federal regulations that you have to comply with. As well as societal norms and so forth, all of those are going to come under the umbrella of bioethics programming, which again will be a town center activity. And so rather than Mortgage saying, we're going to run a bioethics program, and that will naturally lead to quite, you know, we have a lot of sharp thinkers and people with sharp minds who are going to say, if the bioethics program is simply a mortgage activity entity, there's going to be conflict of interest, right? But if you have an honest broker, there's a town center that runs a vibrant, and it's an independent organization, runs a vibrant bioethics discussion and programming, and mortgage is a participant, that creates a much healthier dialogue, I believe, and it's ultimately better for the institute.
Okay, that's a great example. The final question is more about the building itself and the space. We're out here in Research Park in a unanticipated space that now the institutes are able to take advantage of. But when we're talking about the building over there on University, how do you think moving into that new space, into that new building, is going to affect your work?
I'm glad you made that comment, because it's a great opportunity to put everything in context. So while it is true that where we are right now at the Research Park is an unexpected gift, but somewhat ironically, it was always anticipated, in the sense that even going back to my interview in the summer of 2008, I said that the Mortgage Institute would ultimately need significant space at the Research Park as part of its discovery to delivery vision. And I'm just so pleased that rather than trying to raise many, many millions of dollars in a few years to try to build a building at the Research Park, that we had this extreme good fortune that our gift from Mentor Biologics, which happened December of 2009, just a few months ago, actually allowed us to achieve that state many, many years ahead of schedule. So this was unexpected acceleration of our timetable, and extremely welcome in that respect. But it was something that we had planned on all along in terms of ultimately having presence here at the Research Park. Because what I see is that this new building going up at University Avenue, and it is a meeting place. It was a building designed to optimize collaboration across many different fields, exploiting its central location on campus near so many of the departments that bring the intellectual content to the institutes. And so the building was designed to optimize collaboration, not optimize or maximize laboratory space. And so roughly anywhere from 30 to 45% of the building space, depending on how you count, is actually laboratory space that directly does the work of the Mortgage Institute. The rest of the space is either the public institute or the common space for meetings and collaborations and discussions. And you can contrast to other buildings where more of the building is designed for wet labs and relatively little space is set aside for interactions and meetings. And so that raises the natural question, if you create a meeting space that creates fertile discussions and interesting ideas, and eventually people generate new inspiration, but now it's time to get to work, where will the work get done? And so I always felt that there's sufficient workspace in laboratory space in this university campus building to show what can be done from the collaborations. But eventually, when the projects and the ideas take a life of their own and become really big, they would have to move elsewhere. And a logical choice of that elsewhere, especially if it becomes a commercial company or a spin-out activity to a startup company, then that should happen at the Research Park. And so I see this dynamic in the future of ideas going from the meeting space to the laboratories, which are reconfigurable and very agile and nimble, and then eventually when they grow beyond that, to the Research Park and ultimately companies beyond.
Has finding yourselves with this space in the Research Park available years ahead of schedule already changed your ideas about what's going to happen upon move-in over at the
No, the Research Park space just allows us to have the confidence that we can grow projects to some big scale. But in the short term, it has not affected our immediate goals for what we want to achieve in the campus building.
Are there any concerns you have about this space, again, since it's a, as you say, sort of a new mix of the meeting spaces and the wet lab space and town center and the bottom? Are there any things you're kind of ready to watch out for or
well,
pay
I think
careful
not
attention
just,
to.
Not just my own views, but the general discussion by the folks who have spent a lot of time and energy looking at the new building. The building is unique in several respects, including its LEED certification, mm-hmm. energy efficiency. It's a very green building.
Mm-hmm.
But to really achieve the benefits of that design, it must be operated accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
And in that sense, it's very different from the other buildings that have been built on campus. And so one of the things we have to watch out for, and it's not something that I personally am responsible for, mm-hmm. but something that we are putting the right people and the right capabilities around the building, is to make sure that it is operated to achieve its capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
So that you know, you make a big investment up front to have those savings, but it must be operated correctly to achieve those savings.
Right.
And so that's one of the challenges, and certainly as a major occupant of that building, the Mortgage Institute will be very motivated to make sure that the building is run appropriately to achieve those expectations.
Mm-hmm. We've reached the end of my interview script. Mm-hmm. I want to ask one final question,
sure.
which is to kind of turn it around to you and say, as we've been discussing, you've been thinking back on the genesis of the Institute and your involvement with it. Is there anything else that comes to mind that you think might be good to get on the record at this point about sort of your impressions of this project? You know, before move in, while things are getting rolling, as you're again hiring for the Institute.
Yeah. So I think one of the healthy things about a university community is we're always debating and always raising doubts about the success of anything, and that's just the nature of an academic mm-hmm. community. That's also one of the reasons why it's a very healthy, vibrant, and dynamic community. But I think sometimes that can get in the way of dampening optimism. And so I'd like to, as a counterpoint, think back to what are the positives, not just of this project, but of the entire history of the university. And so if we celebrate the successes of the partnership between the University of Wisconsin and the Wisconsin Alumni Research Foundation, going back to its founding in the 1920s, and now it's a history that's longer than 8 decades. It is one of the most spectacular successes of a technology transfer partnership in a public university setting.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not saying that, you know, here's something that's broken and what can we do to fix it. Here's something that's probably the best example in a public university, and we want to take that success and make it even better.
Mm-hmm.
And so I see the two institutes, but specifically the Mortgage Institute, as an opportunity to take something that's already been a spectacular success and take it to even greater heights.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the pessimist will say, if it ain't broken, don't fix it. You can take something that's really successful and make it less than successful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that's where we're headed. Given what's happened over the past 2-3 years, and especially given the generous support of John and Tasha Mortgage,
mm-hmm.
And the support of the Wisconsin Alumni Research Foundation trustees, and we've got a great group of trustees at the Mortgage Institute for Research, and the first set of scientific leaders that have been recruited is just a spectacular team.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very optimistic that over the next 5-10 years, despite the tremendous success and the historical track record that we're compared with, I think in 5 to 10 years, people will be very proud of what we have contributed
mm-hmm.
Via the Mortgage Institute into this great university community. So that's the kind of like the closing thoughts. And I certainly welcome additional opportunities as more things happen, and I'm sure we'll have additional interviews. I look forward to them, and I'm very appreciative of this opportunity to share these views.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks very much. I'm going to turn off both recorders now.